Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oh, South Kakalaka! Don't you dare be sour! Clap for your world famous two-time champs and feel the power!
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12-Pack Radio, get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12-Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news, the home of the BetaRank College Football Statistical Model, and your home for Sharp College Football. This is a Sharp College Football podcast. You know it. You know why? Because it is freaking week one of college football. We are ready to go. We're going to go through every Pac-12 game. We're going to go through every matchup, and we're going to do it with the fury of a thousand suns. I am joined, as always, by Rob Bowron from Sharp College Football. Sir, how are you? I can't believe we're here. We had a week zero, no Pac-12 games. This is the real deal.
I mean, not only do we have no Pac-12, I mean, it's not like we had any really, really interesting games. I mean,
well, there were
definitely some things we felt like there were football and they were on TV. But these were, I mean, they were fun for the most part, but like there weren't any games with, you know, there were quite a few teams that you thought, well, they're probably not going to make a bowl.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Scott Frost canning watch begins. That started about 36 yeah. hours ago. We have a ton of games here to go on. And normally what we'll do, if you're new to the show, we normally will preview or we'll review what happened the previous year, previous week. We'll preview the games coming up. We kind of merge them together. But since this is week one and since there's so many games, we're just going to get right into it.
You want it? Pac-12 gambling lines?
You got it.
Nice.
It. Baby, just bust a move.
Okay.
Oh, it feels good. It feels good to be back. So many games. So many FCS teams, Rob. let's just dive into it, and we'll have a lot more to break down in terms of looking back at how these teams were able to perform. What we try to do here at 12-Pack Radio is put more credence to the, although Rob, like Sharp College Football, I noticed we have FCS teams now too. I guess we should do a quick plug for that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, so starting in week five, we'll be rolling out FCS rankings. And they'll be like, I'm really excited because as it sits right now, like even what Bill Connolly does for his SP Plus FCS rankings is just basically looking at final scores and score differential. We're going to get the same level of data that we get for BetaRank for FBS. And so we'll have that level of granularity to be able to talk about who's the most explosive offense in FCS, who's got the best passing offense, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So when your team plays Northern Arizona next year, we got you covered, baby.
Well, that's something to talk about.
but for this week, what we're going to do is when we go to the FCS teams, we're going to talk about, I think what we want to see out of these teams as they're playing FCS teams. Now, clearly, looking at you, Arizona, looking at you, Washington, Pac-12 teams have dropped games to these FCS opponents. But really what we want to do, since we don't have a good handle on the strength of some of these teams, although we will, you know, in week five and next year, we'll just going to kind of look out for what we have coming up. So the first game, Thursday, 7 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. Arizona State hosts Northern Arizona at Sun Devil Stadium. Rob, ASU just released their depth chart. They spelled yeah. Emory Jones's name wrong, so that was unfortunate. But so you had tweeted out something that you thought that the roster looked thin. I kind of disagree with you on the offensive side. I do think that the defense, I have some grimacing, you know, Michael Scott faces, like that gif of him looking at stuff when I take a look at the depth. But overall, still, even looking at this roster, the way that it's constructed, I still think, like, this is why I think this team's going to be a bowl team, is because they have, I mean, if as long as the wheels don't fall off, which could very well happen. But if you want to play ASU, I think you want to play them later in the year. You know, any thoughts on the depth chart as it was released? And how do you think, what are you going to be looking for when they, you know, match up against the Lumberjacks?
I mean, I think for me, the thing that stuck out to me on the offensive side of the football is the skill positions outside of Emory. I mean, you could argue, including Emory. Actually, let's not kid ourselves. It's just the skill. Like, I think the offensive line is largely fine. You know, like, I think that they're going to be pretty good there. I think their starters, including Jones, are good, right? Like, you have Emory Jones, you have Holiday as your starting running back. Like, I'm fine there. I just think you start to get into like the wide receivers, and you're like, oh well, yeah, okay. I mean, what they're left with, and we talked about this, you know, like, they're just not left with a lot. You know, they had some good, you know, most of their best players transferred out. I think if Holiday gets hurt, like, I'm not sure he's a power five every down back.
I totally agree. I agree on that.
That's what I mean. I think ASU, so long as like people are mostly healthy, they're fine. You know, like, I'm not saying like going to compete for the Pac-12 South, but I think within a pretty mushy Pac-12 that wasn't very good last year, I think they're okay. I think you're right. Like, the defense worries me. The defensive backfield, I think, in particular, yeah, with all that they lost, and then looking through it, kind of worries me. But it, I mean, truthfully, like, I don't recall like a ton of transfers out where they had like a ton of experience. Like, these are guys that probably would have been stepping in this year anyway. It's just they're very unknown.
Yeah, you had some of the starters depart that ended up, you know, that really held down the fort for a number of years. But to your point, I can't recall a lot of players that ended up departing in the secondary either. The two things to keep in mind is T. Marcus Davis, the Baylor transfer, and then Jordan Clark are both listed as injured. So I don't know if that means they're out for the season. Shout out. Look, I know everybody dumps all over Herm Edwards. I get it. But the man released a depth chart with injuries and injuries out for the year. God bless him. I really do appreciate that. Come on. We're trying to give you free media. We're trying to cover this sport for free. Get people interested in your program. And when you have people like Herm that are releasing like legitimate depth charts with injuries, and then you have Sarkisian who like isn't going to release a depth chart all year. It's like, for the love of God.
And
like,
Lincoln Riley didn't put one out.
God, I you know, I'm starting to figure out why Oklahoma was a little bit salty about him.
Lincoln Riley's playing Rice. One of the worst programs in all of college football.
Hey, don't give away that advantage here, Rob. Don't give that away. Not one.
It's not an advantage. It's not like Nick Saban puts a depth chart out. He's not losing anything in this.
No, I'm like, you know, taking a look at the defensive line. Looks okay, right? Like Omar Norman Lott, who was kind of, was he in? Was he out? Is he coming? Is he going? He's in. Nuesta Jade Silveira, I think is how you pronounce it. My apologies. I'll get it. I'm going to be watching all these games. Listed as second, right? So he got beat out.
He's likely going to get, he was given an or at least. Like, he'll get some playing time.
That's true. One of the names that I was looking at for was Trevez Moore, right? I think he was the Auburn transfer. And there was some concern about him in terms of like, is he actually going to put it together? And I actually think it's a good thing that Joe Moore is ahead of him in the depth chart. Like, if Trevez Moore is there and like he's the star, that kind of, I think that speaks poorly of the folks behind him, unless, you know, maybe we have a pleasant surprise. And I hope that all these players really put it together this year. But yeah, the secondary is the thing that worries me. So as I'm looking at this game against NAU, the number one thing that I am most focused on, outside of the quarterback play, of course, which is the most important aspect on the field, is can they just shut down any passing game? Like, I really want to see even these two, like the twos on the cornerback side, because T. Marcus Davis was supposed to start. I think Clark was one of the transfers too. I really want to see that secondary play well, and that'll give me a little bit. Look, it's NAU, right? Like, we're grasping straws here, but that is something that I'm going to keep the most focus on as they play this game on Thursday. It'll be on my television. I'm very excited about it. What else do you think? What are you looking for when it comes to ASU and NAU?
I mean, NAU could throw the ball around a little bit last year. So, I mean, for an FCS team. So that's what I'm interested to see, is like, can ASU really slow them down a bit? Offensively, I mean, they were not good. They were a bad Power 5 offense last year. I don't think that Jaden Daniels is a huge loss for them. I think Emory Jones is an interesting player, and that he's like a bigger, faster runner on his own, right?
Yeah.
But I'm interested. It's like, I mean, like, for ASU, it's like, what does this offense look like, right? Like, you've got a new offensive coordinator in. You've got a new quarterback in with a different skill set. And look, Emory Jones had a decent completion rate last year. It was 64%. It's not as if, like, he was that bad last season, you know, like he just, Anthony Richardson was a bit more dynamic. So yeah, I am like I expect ASU to win this game. I'm interested to see if the, like, if the defense gets tested at all by NAU, if this is closer a little bit later than we think. And I'm interested to see, like, I want to see the defensive line or the offensive line be able to push NAU around. Like, you remember a couple years ago, was it ASU when they were playing Sacramento State?
I think that was
like,
Cal. Was it ASU or Cal? But I know what you're talking
about. It was ASU. Yeah. And it was when it was before they, it was like, was it, it might've been like Herm's fixed first year. Like they did not have the offensive line fixed.
Yeah.
and it was bad. And that was like a harbinger of things to come. That's what I'm kind of interested in here is like, you know, the offensive line should be pretty good. They should be able to show up, run the football, you know, like they're probably not going to ask Jones to run the football a lot in this game. I don't think I'm going to take too much away from the passing game. Like ASU's guys should be better than the, you know, the guys that NAU has.
Yeah.
You know, so like, that's it. Like, I mean, is ASU able to show up, dominate the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football, really? Like that'd be the concern. And like, and can they cover, right? Like, because that's where their big worry might be.
Yeah, last thing on my end, and it's just more of a bugaboo on my front. The Chase Hatch, you know, hype coming out of spring. Look, I've seen this story 6 years in a row, and he was listed as like the starting tight end. Get out of my face. Get out of my face. I want Jalen Conyers. I want Messiah Swinson out there. Like, I do not want to see Chase Hatch unless he's really legitimately better than those two guys, because I think there's a significant physical difference between like the way that Conyers and Swinson are built and Chase Hatch. But it's just like, I had the, like, you could hear my eyes rolling in the back of my head when I saw that one aspect on the depth chart. So, just something I at least wanted to play my flag there. Let's see what we got next here. Moving on from FCS to a real game, Friday, 7:00 p.m. on ESPN, Colorado hosts TCU at home. Colorado is a 13.5-point underdog, and it was fascinating, Rob, because this game opened at 10.5, and it was 10.5 yesterday. So this line has jumped 3 points in the last 24 hours, and I rarely see a line like that move, except for the New Mexico State line move for like 6 points, and I caught it too late, which was a bummer. I should have caught it at 12.5. Would have won that game. Beta Rank, by the way, won that game. This is a fascinating matchup, right, because Colorado – I think, you know, I want to say we don't know what we have. We know what we have. Like, I'm pretty sure I know what Colorado is. It's the TCU that I'm curious, right? Sonny Dykes comes. I think that offense is going to be good. I think they're going to be aggressive. I think they have some good players on that team. What do we have in this TCU game? And what can Pac-12 fans expect from TCU when they show up to Folsom Field?
So Beta Rank has this game. It's got TCU projected right now at 63 and Colorado at 86. But I think TCU is a team with significant upside. In comes Sonny Dykes. He's got Garrett Riley, Lincoln Riley's younger brother, as his offensive coordinator. Garrett Riley spent some time at App State learning their run game. So he's got a little bit of a diversified, of course, like Sonny Dykes famously, you know, came from out of the air raid. But he made a hire in Gillespie, the defensive coordinator at Tulsa, who for a couple of years has been one of the best group of five defensive coordinators in all of college football. TCU, oddly enough, because like what did in Gary Patterson last season was the defense. They fell all the way to 122 in Beta Rank. I mean, they were horrendous. And you wouldn't have expected that, right? I mean, like Gary Patterson hung his hat on the defense. It's kind of like poked along offensively for a couple of years. They were okay last season, 55 overall. But what they did last year really well was they put up really big plays. They do have some playmakers available. They were at 15 in explosive drives. They were just at 129 in drive efficiency. They couldn't consistently put up points, even though they were putting up yards. I like TCU to improve offensively. I like them to improve defensively. Meanwhile, like what Colorado definitely hung their hat on last year, I mean, their offense was hideous. They were at 68 last year in Beta Rank on defense. I don't think that there's like they had a really big run pass split. They were 92 in effective rush, 41 in effective pass. I don't like this Colorado defense. They lost both of their corners. who helped them get to that 41 and effective pass. I think TCU has an opportunity to come out and make a statement here. Beterang's only got this at 6 points, but it doesn't see the coaching change at TCU. It also doesn't see that Mike Sanford's now the offensive coordinator at Colorado. Yeah, there's just like Colorado, like every time I try to come up with something really positive about Colorado, I don't. I feel like I just find something and I'm like, oh, I hadn't seen this other negative thing about them.
Yeah, and I think they lost one of their defensive tackles right up the nose. One of their big guys ended up transferring out at the last minute. So, yes, this is a problem. 13.5, like, look, so fair warning, right? To start, like, we start chugging along. Like about week two or week three, when we kind of see these teams. So these first couple picks, right? Like I'm just stretching my legs. I'm making small bets here. You know, I'm stretching my hamstrings over here. So please, for the love of God, do not ride with me at this point. I will let you know when I'm hot. But I feel filthy about this. I'm going to take the points. I think, like, look, a 3-point jump. That just scares me a little bit. I don't like Colorado. I'm totally with you on this front, Rob, where I can't find a lot of redeeming qualities about it. I think TCU is going to be a good team. I think they're going to win. I bet their win total over. I just think 13.5 at home with the altitude and this being the first opening game when I think people are going to get, kind of work things out. I feel like Colorado is going to keep this close. And I could look back next week and just go, oh my gosh, this is like, Bryant, you knew this team was a disaster. You've been talking about this team being a disaster for like the last 10 years. And shame on you. But I'm going to stick with them on this one. I think they come out and play a little harder. I do not expect Colorado to be good for the rest of the season, but I think 13.5 is a lot at altitude against a team that has a new coach and implementing a new system that, by the way, could be significantly better than it was last year. But I'm going to take the points. It probably sounds crazy, but you know, if Beterank has it at 6, like I fully expect TC to be significantly better to what the numbers are saying.
Yeah, right now. I think this is one of those ones that I think from the beginning I was like, yeah, Beterank's gonna miss on TCU for a couple of games early in the season before it nails him down. But I think this is likely closer to like 17. And I'm taking TCU.
Okay. I feel dirty. Like just I am fully aware of the like, you know, it's like those decisions where you're like, you look back in the moment, you go, this is not a good decision. Then you make it anyway. That is me at this moment in time taking Colorado. But anything else to mention? Like, so I guess on TCU, they haven't announced a quarterback or a starting running back. So it's a little hard for us to kind of talk through who actually is going to be on the field. But I mean, right. Like, I think you broke down. Did you do TCU in your series this year or were they too far down?
I didn't. They're too far down. Max Duggan started last season. And they have, I mean, he is definitely more of a runner than a thrower, you know, and like he's got some downfield accuracy issues, but if you have him in there, I mean, and if he's your starter, like TCU is going to look to run the football. I think if you flip it and you have either of the other guys in there, like you might see more of a passing offense, but Sonny Dykes is throwing out that like all three of them might play, which I mean, I think if they're blowing Colorado out, sure.
Yeah. Keep an eye on that defensive hire, like you mentioned, the DC from Tulsa. Like that I think most people thought that was a sneaky good hire. So, yeah. And I don't anticipate TCU's defense to be as crap. It just seemed like the team gave up on Patterson last year. But we will see on that front. Anything that you're keeping a lookout for in this game before we move on? Like, for me, is it going to be Brandon Lewis? I'm assuming it's going to be him rather than Shrout.
Yeah.
And I want to see if he can move the ball a little bit more. I'm worried that Bursard went to Michigan State. Like, to your point, like every time I'm like, oh, and then it's like, oh, like the sad trombone plays. Every time I think of something happy about Colorado, but you know, I guess the defense on my front, like they lost basically all of their corners to better teams. Like, you know, is there anybody behind them? I don't know.
You remember when those guys were freshmen, like Colorado took their lumps with some really bad pass defense, getting those guys experience, and then they transferred out. And just like that, that's a killer for the program.
Yeah. Gross. I'm going to take a shower after this. All right, moving on. Our next game we have 11:30, Saturday at 11:30. Ooh, look at that pre-noon game. Let's go. Kegs and Eggs. Bowling Green is a 24.5-point underdog on the road at UCLA. This line has kind of jumped up and down. I think it opened pretty high and then dipped and then jumped up again. I think it's bounced about 2 points. UCLA, 24.5-point favorite here. And Bowling Green was bad last year, right? I mean, how bad were they?
They were 123 in beta rank. I mean, look, if this was last year's teams, UCLA finished 27, Bowling Green finished 123. On a neutral field, UCLA would be favored by 37.
Oof.
But it's not to be clear, it's not last year's teams. You know, beta rank has this at UCLA at 16.5. I think that might be a little low, but you know, Bowling Green comes in projected this season. They finished at 123. They're projected to improve to 113. UCLA if you look at their underlying, you know, some of the numbers that might help push them up, like the recruiting just hasn't, like they're 24 overall in recruiting. It's not great. They haven't done a tremendous job developing talent the last couple of years. They're at 94 in returning production, right? So like, even though like the focus is of course on like Dorian Thompson Robertson's back, they do lose some other players, you know, around him. And yeah, I mean, it is going to, like, I feel like in large part, it's going to depend on like how well the offensive line gels and do they get anything more out of the defense? Look, like Bowling Green was in most of the MAC was in no way good last season. I mean, at all, you know, the thing that's pumping Bowling Green up right now is they're at number 2 in returning production, number 3 on offense, number 11 on defense. There's just a ton of this, you know, experience back on this team. I mean, I think that this one's likely closer. Like, I think when this one hit, I think you had sharp money come in and move it down. And now I think it's maybe it moved down too much and it's coming back up.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, to your point on returning production, they started a ton of young players last year.
Yeah.
And so those players do return, but this team sucked. You know, last year, did they do anything well? Like, because when I think of UCLA, right? I mean, obviously, we know what they're going to do on offense. Like, they're going to do some creative things in the run game. They're going to pass it to either big wide receivers or tight ends. And they're probably not going to play defense super well. So,
yeah,
I really want to take UCLA. Because, like, I remember the last couple of years on some of these games where UCLA would play a bad team. And I'm like, 24 points is a lot. Chip Kelly doesn't have his act together, blah, blah, blah. And then they end up just like, that's what UCLA does. They kind of like beat really bad teams that are super outmatched. And then there's some other games where it's kind of like, you know, when they're playing teams that are of their caliber, I think that's when things start getting a little hairy. But, you know, if you were like, I guess I'm trying to get you to talk me out of taking the 24 in terms of what did Bowling Green do well last year? Because it's mostly the same players that are going to return. Is there anything that they were strong at?
I mean, like, it's worth pointing out, they were the worst offense in all of college football last season.
Let's go. Love it.
So they were 130 out of 130. In particular, where they struggled last season was negative drive. So too many three and outs, too many turnovers. That's a major problem. It's a little like they did play a ton of young players last year. But they did have Matt McDonald was a senior last year at quarterback. He transferred in for Boston College, I believe. McDonald can get better. I mean, this entire offense can get better than they were last year. McDonald, you know, like he had a decent, 60% completion percentage. Like, they're just, I think if you're going to talk yourself into it, like, they were really young at running back last year, you know, nothing but freshman running backs getting carries. They were pretty young at the offensive line. I think UCLA is a little under projected coming into this year. I think there's some carryover from the early Chip Kelly tenure and from like the end of the Jim Mora tenure where they weren't developing players very well. And in those days too, they also recruited better. And so like that helped bump them up in the rankings. Now as their recruiting's fallen down a bit, that certainly hurt them. Like the defense for UCLA has some room, like where they really struggled last season was drive efficiency. They were 116 there. I think they have some upside. I mean, I think UCLA is probably closer to like 21 points better than Bowling Green. It feels like a lot of points to be putting on a UCLA team that has like a ton of transfers, has some questions at the offensive line that need answered.
I don't care. Mac sucks. I'm going to take UCLA. That is a lot of points though. Like, right when it was 22.5, Now it's 24 and a half. I'm absolutely not betting real money on this game, but I got to make a pick, so I'll take UCLA. Who are you taking?
I'm going to take Bowling. Oh man, am I going to take
the worst MAC team? Not the worst, but a MAC team.
They're not the worst. Just offensively, they were inconceivably bad last year. Finally, no, they did. So they have a new OC. I'm going with Bowling Green. I just think that's too many points to trust UCLA.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're on opposite sides of both of this. I like this. Somebody's going to come out on top here. All right. Next game. Really,
you know me. Like, I'm terrible in the early season. Like, I was like, like, it's only later that I get hot.
Yeah, it takes a while to figure out these teams, and we'll get there. And by the way, normally we'll break out, like, what is their offensive line versus the other defensive line, because we'll just have that data set with us, but not quite there yet. Another game that pops up in the noon, I kind of like this noon slate here, right? You got UCLA, you got going on, you got Arizona, a 6-point underdog on the road opening the Snapdragon Stadium in San Diego State. Shouts to them for finally not naming it after a casino, right? Like, I enjoy casinos, but just... not a great look, right? One of the casinos.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to actually bet on college sports. Arizona 6-point dog on the road at San Diego State. Braxton Burmeister, you know, a cup of coffee at Arizona's recruiting table for a moment, goes over from the Hokies to San Diego State. You know, you could take, like, I think the Nebraska game is a perfect example of this, right? Like, where you project last year's results on this year's game, right? Arizona just got waxed at home. Like, it was over before it started. And, like, and then San Diego State, like, rolled Arizona down the hill. Like, you know, like,
yeah. Oh, they had a bunch of big plays early. And then, it was bad. Like, it was like that thing from The Replacements where, like, they're talking about quicksand. That was Arizona in that game.
Oh, it's awful. New year, a new game, and basically new rosters, particularly for Arizona. But at the same time, I think we know what San Diego State's going to be, right? Bad offense, good defense. But I'm curious what the numbers had them, you know, being excellent at last year, minus the punt god, that, which, I mean, I don't want to go there right now, but, like, there's a lot of legal and it's just a bad,
yeah.
I mean, and the coaches were talking about, like, the sexual assaults and stuff like that. So I'm not making light of that, but he was a really good, like, he was one of the best players on that team, and he's no longer at the university. I think he's using the NFL, and I don't know if he's there anymore, but
no, he, like, got cut.
Yeah. It's like the one time when we talk about a punter in terms of, wow, that guy really turned the field. It was like ASU's punter a few years ago, San Diego State's punter. And that was, like, a really big deal because their offense was terrible. So, like, give me the numbers. How bad was this offense, and how good was the defense, and how is that going to bounce up against Arizona's new roster?
So the offense was at 103 last season. They were at 62 in effective rush, 110 in effective pass. They were not explosive. They're 105 in explosive drives, 83 in drive efficiency, so a little bit better there. Now, Arizona, like, what they did well was they contained explosive drives at 63. They caused three and outs and turnover, and mostly three and outs. They didn't cause a lot of turnovers, but mostly three and outs last year, 35 there. They just struggled to with consistency. 121 in drive efficiency. You could put together drives against Arizona last year. Now, Arizona was at 98 in effective rush and 74 against the pass. Burmeister, I don't think they have a great bunch of wide receivers, you know, and, like, something about SDS, you know, San Diego State, just to keep an eye on, is they were really, really bad offensively last year. Like we just talked about, they're at 120 in returning production on the offensive side of the football. Only 44% is coming back. That's something to really keep an eye on, I think, for them. Like, they are going to have some holes to plug on the offensive line. They lose almost all of their secondary as well. Now, they do return. They lose their best player on the defensive line, but the other three players return that were pretty good. It's going to, like, I think Beta Rank's got this at 6.5 for San Diego State. I got to admit, I like her. Like, I'm not alone here. I like Arizona in this game. Versus 6.5.
Yeah, I look, because we're both Arizona grads, so I try to approach Arizona games with you know, just, like, as a nonpartisan. And I think, like, in the first couple games, I do that. Like, you know, I took Arizona against BYU because I just thought that, you know, last year their opener, that they would just be better. And they covered that spread, by the way. And they covered it extremely poorly. They just played so Gunnar Cruz was such a disaster, and they still covered the game. I look, the whole team, basically not the whole team, but like all of the parts of this team, warts and all, right? Peyton Fears is still your right tackle, so that's a problem.
Right. Right.
But Arizona, as we were talking about them, just released their depth chart. There's like no surprises. It is exactly the team that we thought would be on the field. And I kind of think that against Braxton Burmeister and a Mountain West team with some of the talent overhaul that happened at Arizona, like, I'm going to take the points. I think Arizona can win this game outright. They certainly could lose. Like, right there, there is a world where San Diego State's defense is still awesome and Arizona just can't score. But I don't think that that happens nearly as often as Arizona being competitive in this game, even in a tough environment. I don't like the fact that they're opening someone's stadium. That's always a problem. But I'm going to take Arizona. I'm going to take the points. I'm not excited about it, but I do think that this is a team that can be really competitive, and they have. I just think that I don't think as much about the San Diego State team as I have in the past.
Here's the crazy thing, like. Because I mean, they are starting two new corners. They think they've got three new safeties out there for them. There's no way, like last year, you take the guys that were there for San Diego State against Arizona's wide receivers, but you would take McMillan and Cowing against these guys. Burnett's going to get some playing time along with Lines. Like, Dorian Singer didn't get to play in that game against San Diego State. He really emerged. Like, Jaden Delores, I think the biggest, there's two questions for this game if you're Arizona. One is, can Arizona's offensive line handle San Diego State's largely veteran defensive line? That's a question, right? But I think Arizona, if they can, Arizona's going to be able to move the football, because I think that they're going to be able to, like, Arizona's skill position players are just better. And then, can Arizona handle what should be a pretty bad offense? I mean, defensively, right? Like, and that's a big if. Like, this is Johnny Manson's first time calling plays. I think with San Diego State, like, you don't have to worry a ton about the passing game. Like, Burmeister's probably an improvement over some of what they've had in the passing game. But what you really got to worry about with him is that guy is freaking fast. Like, he's legitimately really fast. So that's like, I mean, that's the angle of, like, a running QB can cause real problems. But versus 6.5 or, 6 points. I like Arizona. Like, I think that I'm gonna take Arizona in this game.
Okay. Well, we'll take a look.
I mean, the other part is, like, San Diego State with Ariza last season, their place kicking stunk. They were 53 overall in special teams. So, like, without him, they could be a pretty bad special teams unit.
Yeah. All right, we'll keep a look. Again, there is a world where Arizona loses this game by 14, and, like, the crowd gets into it. And so, but I'm gonna throw that out there for now. I'm gonna take the points. I'm gonna pick Arizona. The next game is one of the biggest games of the week, right? Number 11 Oregon goes into Georgia. They do go into Georgia.
They go into Georgia. They go to Atlanta.
Yes, basically Athens. 12:30 noon on ABC. Oregon is a 17-point underdog, and I just think that's way too many points for this Oregon team. I'm curious what, like, clearly, Rob, you have previewed Georgia. You know what?
Just to this game for the Saturday Six too.
Yeah. How are you approaching this?
So Beta Ray has this is Georgia at number 2, Oregon at number 14. And Beta Ranks roughly had this around the same points, which is, it's got it at 14.5. I think it had it before Bill Connolly updated his returning production numbers. I think it had it closer to 16. It's at up to 17 now. I think that there's a couple of things to keep an eye on here. Like, Oregon's defense really struggled last season. They were 40-4 overall in Beta Rank, but they mostly did a good job controlling big plays. They mostly did a good job in play efficiency and negative drives. They just struggled. You could drive on them, right? Like we saw it, like, I bring up that Arizona game when, like, McLeod, like, freaking Jordan McLeod. Like, if he hadn't thrown five interceptions, Arizona probably scores at least like two or three touchdowns, right? Mm-hmm. But it, like, Oregon, that's what Oregon was relying on. Like, they were left relying on interceptions because they couldn't get them off the field. And they certainly did give up some big plays against Utah, right? Like, Utah gouged them. But I'm interested to see, because like Georgia, what I think is largely going to still be there for them is the running game, right? Like, they've had a consistently good running game. I think if you're hearing to the contrary, and there's some advanced stats out there, like the EPA run pass that like will tell you that Georgia had a bad running game last year. That's wrong. Like, those stats are bad. People shouldn't put those out. They were at 8 in effective rushing beta rank last season. Now, people stacked the box against Georgia, and that opened up the passing game, and let them put up a lot of really big plays. They basically dared Stetson Bennett to beat them. But I worry about this. Like, look, like I think Oregon's going to be a lot better defensively with Lanning there to help clean things up. But they struggled a little bit defending the pass last season. Like, the memory, of course, is like Utah torching them with big plays on the ground. But they struggled more in defending the pass last year. I'm just interested to see how that shakes out for them, you know, coming into this one. Because, like, Bennett's not going to play on Sundays. But he's fine, right? Like, if you're going to spend all your time talking about this game, about like focusing on Stetson Bennett, like, you're focusing on the wrong thing. Like, there are other players on this team that are going to beat you. What's interesting, though, is like, they did lose some skill position players, some of their wide receivers that are now making noise in the NFL, like Pickens. But Brock Bowers, their excellent tight end, is back. The matchup of him versus some of Oregon's linebackers is going to be good. Look, I think Oregon might be able to slow down Georgia's running game in the way that teams tried to last season. It's going to come down to their corners, likely on that side of the ball, trying to stop Oregon's wide receivers. And I like Georgia in that matchup.
17.5, though, Rob.
Yeah, I don't like 17.5. I kind of like it where it's at about 14.
I'm going to take Oregon. I think their offensive line is good. I think they'll be able to run the ball. I don't trust Bo Nix. I don't think Oregon wins this game. And I have heard like a couple of people out there, I think like some guys on the Cover 3 podcast and some other place, like, are giving Oregon a chance to be like a live dog. I just, like, look, I know that they went.
What?
We saw live what they were able to do to Ohio State, but that was a big part of that was just crappy defensive calling, and it got
if you're gonna sit, in cover two man virtually every play, like, yeah, people will figure out how to beat you. Like, you know who put up, like, whatever Oregon fans say that, I'm like, dude, Tulsa came in the next week and put up like 500 yards and like put the nail in the coffin on Kerry Combs. Like, they had a defensive coordinator problem.
Yeah, I do. Like, I'm curious about the Brock Bowers thing worries me, because I understand Justin Flo and who's the other guy that's back there, the two 5-star guys, but right, like, bat, like, hey, they've been injured. I want to see if they can actually, you know, cover passes and like do pass coverage. I don't know if that's like, I think he's going to be a massive problem, and he probably gets like 100 yards and a touchdown, but I still think that Oregon has the horses to hang with this team for a bit. And if you're going to give me that extra half point, like, I'll take it, and already have taken it. So I'll take 17.5. Are you taking Oregon? Is that what I heard out of you, Rob?
Yeah, I'm going to take Oregon. Look, I mean, I think Oregon's got enough to like keep it around 14. Maybe I think Georgia's going to win by two possessions, whether it's 10 or 14. Like, I mean, I just don't. I mean, but I think, like, as much as like Joe Moorhead takes a lot of crap from Oregon fans, like, they were 14 in beta rank last year offensively. They just didn't have much in the passing game. Like, I don't, like, Moorhead's a pretty good play caller. Like, I think Dillingham will be a little bit of a downgrade. Nix might be able to get you more than Anthony Brown, but I don't know. I'm not sold on the wide receiver still. Like, and this is like Georgia's defense, like, somebody had a good point today. They're like, you know who didn't go out and take any transfers? Kirby Smart. Like, Kirby Smart looked at the players he had and he's like, yeah, I'm good. I know, because you know, like when people are like you know, in the era, like I mean, Saban at least took two transfers, right? Like you know, Georgia coming off a national championship with all those dudes that they lost on defense or wide receiver, like they could have gone out and gotten some guys, right? And it's not like Georgia doesn't have any NIL money coming off like to begin with, and then coming off a freaking national title, right? And Kirby's like, nope, I don't need anybody.
Ooh, all right. Yikes.
Yeah.
I'm super excited to watch that game. We'll keep an eye on that. All right. We have a number of games to cover here. We got USC, Utah, Florida. We got Boise State, Oregon State, which is a super fun game. Washington, Colgate, toothpaste playing Stanford EMOS. And we'll cover it right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
513 Whiskey declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're moving through the offensive. We're moving through the afternoon slate. Saturday, 1 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. UC Davis on the road against Cal. Rob, I was so bummed. Like, I think it's really important to highlight the fact that, you know, Cal, yeah. Right? I think Brett Johnson is the guy that everybody was super excited about. Very talented defensive lineman. He was kind of playing out of position. He had his chance and he just got hurt. I think that's a huge blow to this Cal team. I'm a little worried. Like, right? Like, UC Davis has the, Troy Taylor, right? The offensive coordinator from Utah that moved over. That team's been okay. Like,
yeah.
I'm legitimately worried about Cal in this game. Am I being too much of a worry word here?
No, I don't necessarily think so. You know, like this Cal defense was at 28 last year. They're pretty good. They really could have used Johnson coming back. They were a little better against the pass than they were against the one run, 24 an effective pass, 32 an effective rush. But yeah, they've got, where do we have Cal projected coming into this year? They're not that high, 67 overall. Holy Moses. Cal's at 111 in returning production. They're at 126 on offense returning production. They lose a ton off of a hideously bad offense last year. 88 in beta rank, 121 in drive efficiency. They really struggled to put up points. They're at 85 in effective pass. I just, when I look at this Cal team, I'm just not, look, I mean, they should be able to put up points here. Like, but that's what we need to see. Like, we need to see them not have offensive dysfunction. Like, they need to look like a normally functioning Power 5 offense in this game.
Yeah.
And to flip it, like, they need to, like, if their defense is really going to be good again, like, we need to see them pretty much shut down UC Davis.
Yeah, I don't expect UC Davis to, like, blow the doors off with explosive plays. Although they could. I mean, like, we don't know until we see it. But I think the thing that worries me most is, like, can UC Davis continuously move the ball down the field? Like, if Cal is just leaking yards, like, throughout the whole game, I am frightened for my life of this season with them. And on the other side, like you mentioned, on the offensive side, if they're just, like, if Luke Musgrave or what's his name, Bill Musgrave is being Bill Musgrave, like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm out. I don't want any part of this team.
Well, they get the Plumber the Elder from Purdue, who lost his job to Aiden O'Connell. I mean, he wasn't bad at Purdue, but like you can tell, like when Aiden O'Connell took over, you could tell the difference.
Yeah, I think look, I hope Cal wins. I want Cal to be a good football program. I think UC Davis has the chance of covering what, like, if this spread is more than 20, I'm taking UC Davis, and I bet you it's going to be like 14. I mean, like, Vegas isn't stupid. So we'll keep a lookout for this. I haven't seen a line for it. You know, oftentimes the FCS teams come out late, but like, yeah, I think like we're in agreement, right? That this could be, this is a weird, bizarre opening game for Cal, and it gives us the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, I mean, like this game, I mean, if you're a Cal, like this game, if this game is within 14 points, like that's going to scare the crap out of you if you're a Cal fan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll move on from there. Good luck, Cal. I hope they're able to win. The next game, Saturday at 3 o'clock, Pac-12 Network. USC is on Pac-12 Network, Rob. That's what they get for playing Rice.
Nobody. Like, I mean, there's a pretty good slate, like, for the Saturday 6 this week. Like, there's a pretty good set of games. Like, there's even, like, a really sneaky good group of five game where Houston's going to UTSA. So, yeah, like, and I don't think Fox really has much committed to the TV schedule this week. So, yeah, USC Rice is not going anywhere.
Well, you can, like, in some ways you could see why. A 33.5 point favorite. They have Rice at home. You had mentioned that Rice is bad, right? They have the offensive line coach, right, from Stanford.
Mike Blomgren, who was their offensive coordinator and offensive line coach.
How bad is this team?
Oh, man, they were 116 in beta rank last year. We have them projected at 120. We have them projected to get worse at 124. They don't have a lot of production coming back on the offensive side of the ball. Defense, a decent amount coming back. I mean, Rice does not recruit very well. It's a pretty well-regarded little academic school in Houston, but last year they struggled on defense, 110 in beta rank. No real big numbers. I mean, like 110 tells you about where, like, they were right around 110 in every single one of their numbers. But UCLA, I mean, I'm sorry, not UCLA. USC is just like, it's a mystery, right? Like, because here's the thing. I think BetaRank has USC pretty far under projected, and it's got them at 29, right? And Rice is at 124. BetaRank's got this at 28.28. So, like, not that far off for a team that I think might be as much as, like, 8 points better. So I'm taking, like, I don't think Rice is going to be able, I don't think this game in particular is going to tell us a lot about where, like, USC's defense really is. Why won't this show? I think that's my real concern here is, like, why, like, I don't think Rice is, a good enough opponent to really let us see what USC is going to be. And that's a bummer, you know, cause like, I'd like to see more of what we, you know, what Rice at 110 offensively last season too. They were really bad. That's like, I think you like, they weren't particularly good throwing the football, and that was USC's Achilles heel, was defending the pass last season. And that's what I want to see for USC is, like, when do I get to see them actually have to defend the pass? That's the big watch out. But I think USC is going to be able to put up just a bonkers amount of points. I mean, I think it's probably closer to like that 36-37, but like Vegas is not far off. Like I said, I think I have them, you know, a bit under projected, and I've got it at 28.
Yeah. Oh, 33.5. So next week, what we'll do is we usually make the, when I bet like Sunday when the lines come out. And so I'm going to start using those because this puts us in a tough spot where it's like we lose 2 points of value. I think this was like at 31 or something like that. And some of the other ones were significantly different. So in my mind, I have USC just beating the doors off of Rice. And I totally agree with you that this Rice team is bad and USC.
Oh, man, this opened at circa at 35.
Oh, it dropped 2 points? Woo!
So, like, yeah, Circa, as of, like, I pulled Circa's number 2 weeks ago when their money lines came out because it was also fair because I updated the projection model then. So I was like, all right, we're both at the same starting point. And it was 35 then at Circa.
Yeah, because I think Lincoln Riley is somebody that's going to, like, not care about running up the score. I just think he's trying to do everything he can to get people to focus on USC. So I think there will be no quarter given. It's just, can USC, can their defense?
No, but here's the question you run into here is, like, what's going on? Like, what happens when USC's backups come into this game. That's the problem with the spread this big.
Yeah.
Right? Like, is like what happens when the backups come in? I'm actually going to take Rice. I know that sounds freaking crazy, but I think once USC's backups come in, like, I think this slows down tremendously and it probably finishes under 30.
I like that. I'm gonna still take.
Because you're not gonna play Addison and Caleb. Like, you're not. Like, if you are, you're stupid. Like, if you're Lincoln Riley, like, ever, like, and like Addison's in there, like, in the third quarter, like, people are gonna kill you.
I think the move that I like what you're thinking. I think the move is USC first half. And even if it's a stupid line, like 20, take.
No, yeah, I'd be like, I might take USC 21 in the first quarter. Like, I mean, Caleb Williams is a huge upgrade off of what they had last year.
Yeah. And look, if USC keeps rolling, then fine. Like, good, good. Yeah. Congratulations to them. All right. So I'm still going to take the 33.5. I'm going to also take the under. It's so the over under 61.5. I think that's too much. Like, I don't think Rice is going to score very much. And I think USC, I just don't see a world where they score like 60. They could.
Yeah.
But I think
they lose so much off that offense from last season. It was bad. Right. And like, I don't think they're going to get it going. Like, yeah. Again, like we talked about, like, I mean, yeah, USC like had massive roster turnover, but I'm not sold that the depth is there.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm still going to take USC. I think that the time to fade them is when they play teams that are like semi-competent. So I don't know if that's Rice. I'm looking at you, Fresno State. I'm excited about that. I'm looking forward to that. And maybe even Stanford. I'm curious to see what happens in that game.
It's funny because if you think of like if Vegas is power ranking, right, like that means Vegas has USC power ranked coming into this year. Like, I've got them at 29, probably somewhere in like the 21, maybe like 19, right? Not down where they are at like 14 or so. And there are people that have them in the top 10. Vegas certainly doesn't have USC in the top 10.
No. Love it. Love it. So we'll keep a look at that. All right, I'll take USC. And yes, I do realize I've taken all Pac-12 teams. That will change. I have some of the other teams here. It just happens to be the order that these games have been done, including Florida, which is a 3-point now. So this line opened at 2. I grabbed it at 2 on our podcast, Rob, a few weeks ago.
Smart.
Popped up to 3. Utah on the road in the swamp going to Gainesville. I'm so excited about this game. This is by far, like, I will be doing nothing but watching this game. It's on ESPN, 4:00 PM, and 3 points, Rob. Like, look, Utah lost to San Diego State. So, you know, you can't defeat Utah. Utah lost to Oregon State last year.
The Oregon State one is the really relevant one, because that one happened after Rising took over.
Yes, that's true. Although, like, I think you and I both understand what happens at Research Stadium sometimes. So I guess my point is, like, look, this isn't an invincible Utah team. I like this team a lot. I've bet them to win the conference. I have their over. I have them at 2 beating Florida. But look, new leadership, clearly, you know, even though Florida wasn't recruiting at the elite level, they were still recruiting very well. It's just everything's relative, right? If you're competing against Alabama and Georgia, Florida fans want you to compete on the recruiting trail against Alabama and Florida. They have not done that. Billy Napier comes in, brings a lot of his Louisiana players and staff with him. What do we got in this Florida team? How are you approaching this?
I'm really excited for this game. I think what's good, like, the matchup to watch is one, Florida's defense wasn't, I know the defensive coordinator got scapegoated and fired last season, but the defense wasn't that bad. They were at 16 overall. This is what happens when your head coach is also the offensive play caller. It's like, he can't scapegoat himself, right? Like, so he like switched up quarterbacks away from Avery Jones and went to Anthony Richardson. But like, the defense was at 16, but you know, like, and they were, had a decent run pass. I mean, like, but Utah brings back what they need, you know, for the most part on offense, right? Like, you know, they've got the tight ends, like the offense, they return quite a bit on the offensive line. Cam Rising is back, right? Like, there's a lot to really like on Utah's offense. Defensively, like, they've got, you know, like, they've got less back. They do have some personnel losses, of course, in particular, you know, at linebacker, But like the matchup, like on defense, like Utah is, I think is, it, they're, look, they're not going to be able to just waltz in here and just score points at will, right? Like this will be a significantly better defense than they faced in Oregon, than they faced in Ohio State last year. Patrick Toney, the defensive coordinator that came over with Napier from Louisiana, was in a lot of ways like Billy Napier's secret sauce. Like he's been the guy that's like put together a pretty good group of five defense at Louisiana last season. You know, Utah's going to have like, and I think Andy Ludwig will, I think they will find some ways to score points, but like, they're not good. I would not expect to come into this game and to be like a juggernaut offensively. I'm trying to think, like, probably the best defense Utah faced last year was, God, the Pac-12 had so many bad defenses. It was probably that San Diego State defense. And it's tough to evaluate them, right? Because, like, Rising doesn't take over until, like, very, very late in that game.
Yeah, and then they put up, like, 21, yeah, right? Because he's not on film and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah. But interestingly, like, I'm really excited to see this Utah defense against this Florida offense, because the Florida offense was not that good last year. But what Napier likes to do is run the football, right? Like his offensive line coach, he's going to call plays. His offensive coordinator is like his former offensive line coach who went to the Giants for a little bit. And now he's back with Napier with Florida. I mean, really good offensive line play is like his calling card. But that is, I mean, like that is like, it is going to be a punch you in the mouth game. And man, Utah likes those kind of games on defense, right? And it's not that like, I think like, I mean, Utah certainly had the injuries in the secondary last year and that hurt, but they return quite a bit at defensive line, you know, and I think they have some expectations for some players to continue to grow there. I like the transfers they brought in at linebacker. I do. Like, I just, I think Reed from Stanford, Diabate from Florida, like, I think they're going to be fine. I think with Phillips there, Phillips is going to be, you know, solid. I don't think Florida's going to challenge them a ton in the passing game, right? Like, I think Utah's going to feel pretty comfortable leaving Phillips out there, you know, in coverage and, you know, maybe creeping down into the box a little bit. I think they largely will feel comfortable with that, but that's what it's going to take is like, can they line up? And I mean, I don't think Billy Napier is actually a great offensive coordinator. I don't think he's a great offensive mind. His offenses were good, but not great at the group of five level. I'm interested to see what it looks like when he's got a lot more talent here, but I think this Utah defense should be pretty good. They were number 9 overall last year. Now the injuries in the secondary and the fact that the pass rush was a little inconsistent hurt them defending the pass last year, but I think, you know, a healthy secondary, they should be good here. I think Utah is able to slow Florida down offensively enough, but Bedering's got at Utah at 7 on the road. And I feel like the Utes more than 2 or 3.
I'm with you. I like the Utes. I already took the Utes. It's possible that they like, right. You're hearing a lot about the heat and it'll be bad, but it's at 7:30.
And Boise went in and won at Florida State, right? Like, it's like people are like, I just love it that, like, I mean, Florida fired their coach last year.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh man, like Utah's, like, I mean, I was watching, I mean, this was like late night football. So, you know, like, buyer beware on like listening to the halftime show on a game on week 0 at, after 10 p.m. Eastern time. But, like, the guys are like, oh, Utah's not ready. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, they're not ready because it's like humid? Like, are we serious about this?
Yeah. I think the one thing that worries me in this game, right? I already have a ticket on Utah, is, and I think I might take the under because of it, is if, like you're saying, Florida's defensive coordinator is solid, right? Like, the game plan from Utah. And I don't think they're going to change it all that much, right? They're going to run the ball. They're going to throw their tight ends. And if there's a way to contain Rising and to keep that running game at like 3 to 4 yards a carry and not give up any explosive plays, like, this becomes a slugfest. And that's fine. And I still think that Utah can win a slugfest. But I mean, I think there's a scenario where, like, what was Utah's run defense last year?
Utah's run defense was really good last season. They were at number 6 overall in effective rush. And that's, I mean, look, like, the linebacker, like, you are losing a star in the linebacking core. But yeah. I think they're I think they'll largely be fine. I think the defensive line might even be a little bit improved. But here's the thing, like Rising, like when he got tackled last year, he's often like getting hit. Like he's not taking a lot of like direct, like contact shots where like the guy's coming up and like Rising's getting hit with force, like counter directional, right? Like, and like he's mostly getting like pulled down, tackled from behind, like that kind of thing. You know, I worry about like, if they are able to contain Rising where the guys are hitting him downhill, even if Rising is gaining like a couple yards, like Utah can't do that all game.
Yeah. Like our friend Hithloday talked about this, and Utah just released their depth chart where, the transfer from Texas, right? Like, Hithloday, I forget who he had on that talked about Utah, but basically they were talking about how, the other Texas transfer that isn't Cam Rising, just didn't have it. And you can see that because he's listed as third on the depth chart. And so they have a younger quarterback coming in and like, you know, pray for the health of Cam Rising, because like, I think this team rides with him, and if he's healthy, they're going to be excellent. So I'm going to take Utah. I'm going to take a look at that under. It's at 51, which is a little low, but I think there's a world where like, this is kind of like, you know, it's a quicker game. There's a lot of running. Utah's not able to, make the most out of those tight ends because of the scheme that Florida puts on the defensive front, and then here we go, and then it's actually a close game. But all right, I think we're both on Utah. We have four more games to go, Rob, and a couple of them are really, really fancy games here, and we'll get to them right after this. All right, we're back. We're talking toothpaste at Stanford. Let's go. We just talked about Utah, Florida. We're going to go in the exact opposite direction. 5 o'clock p.m., Pac-12 Network, Colgate University, the Fighting Camels. Are they Camels, Rob? What are the Colgate?
No, that's something else. The Colgate Raiders.
I like that. The Raiders of Colgate come to Stanford, Palo Alto, patches and all, ready to rock. Look, this game is stupid, and it's very similar to
watch at your own peril.
Yeah, wasn't it like the Sea Wolves of Long Island, like flew all the way to Eugene to play like Oregon? That level of stupidity. Where's Colgate from? Are they like Connecticut?
No, Colgate's in New York. I'm trying to remember. Like, I think they're north of the city.
Oh, look at that. Like Rob was in New York, spent some time in New York. He knows all the things.
I was just in New York actually for business.
Nice. Well, you should have given Colgate a pep talk. Cause, look,
nothing can, I mean, I have seen, like, did you see like my new test for like, if people are even paying attention to the Pac-12 at all, or just paying attention to college football, is when they do their preseason like projections, like where do they put Stanford? Because I swear to God, like in the last 2 weeks, I have seen several national college football writers put like, oh, yeah, like Stanford will finish like second or third in the North. I'm just like, you people, I don't even know what to do with you.
Come on. I mean, you know.
Or there's no North anymore, but like Stanford will finish at like 7-6 or 8-4 or 7-5 or 8-4. I'm like, you people are out of your minds.
And I'm like, guys, can you not watch Colgate versus Stanford on the Pac-12 Network at 5 o'clock? I mean, come on. this game is ridiculous. What are you looking for with Stanford here?
Oh, I mean, it's really like, can they, like, what's the offense look like, and can they click, and can they throw the football around? I don't know. I'm not taking, if Stanford's suddenly able to like run the football here, I'm not buying it. I got to see Stanford running the football against FBS competition, right? You know, like, and it's not like Stanford has sucked running the football against, oh man, like I was way wrong. Like I said, like Colgate's north of the city, like Colgate's up by freaking Syracuse. I'm like, nice. Yeah, all right. Like I knew it was like upstate, like if you live in New York City, like upstate New York is like just this like wilderness to you. Like, because literally everything is upstate. I'm just interested, like, can they throw the football more effectively? What does it look like? Does McKee look in rhythm? Do the wide receivers look better? They should blow the doors off of Colgate. I mean, if they don't, like, that is a huge freaking concern, because, like, the defense was really bad last year, 111 in beta rank, not much to hang your hat on. I'm not going to, like, the only thing to take away from here is, like, if the defense struggles, like, that's a big watch out.
Yeah. I think Stanford, like, I fully expect
Tanner. They struggled stopping the run. 120 in effective rush last year.
That's so bad. I mean, like, yeah, if Colgate scores more than, 17 points, that's a problem.
Right.
And, but I felt like this is how low I have Stanford on, like, the level of where they used to be. Like, I still think against Colgate, they're going to struggle running the football. Like,
oh my God.
I want to see McKee throwing for like 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. That's what I want to see. I would love for them to run the football, but I need to see it. I need to see it. I don't care who they're playing against. Let's see if they can actually do that. Anything else on Stanford Colgate?
No, there's nothing. Just
let's freaking move on. Speaking of bad games, Idaho, the Vandals.
Fighting Charlie Randalls.
Let's go. 10 miles.
Regal, Charlie Regal, not Charlie Randall. Charlie Regal.
There you go. Charlie Regal. 10 miles east of Washington State, coming over the border. Invading
Moscow, Idaho.
Invading the proud state of Washington. This is on the Pac-12 Network at 6:30 p.m. This is also a dumb game. Idaho sucks. Idaho will always suck. If you're a Washington State fan, like, take nothing away from this game. Like, nothing.
At all.
Yeah. You want to move on?
Only thing we're seeing here is, like, does Cam Ward appear to be making highlight plays? Like, if yes, then cool.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. If not, then concerned.
I'm curious who the starting running back is. That's something else that I'm interested
in.
Because they had, like, Deion McIntosh is gone, Max Borgie's gone. I don't think they were super into the Wisconsin transfer they got. So they had this new freshman guy, or I think he might be like a redshirt freshman. In any case, like, I'm curious if he's good, or if, like, I mean, it's hard to see if he's good against Idaho, but, like, it'd be fun to see a running back run for more than 100 yards in this game. I think that's interesting. And I don't think you can take anything away from the defense at this point. I think they really need to play a real team, or like a moderately competent team, to get a feel for how much Dickert has his imprint on this defense, because on paper, it's not the most talented team in the country. And you're really, really leaning on, can Dickert keep the momentum going? Cause I thought he did a good job last year.
He did. They were at 35 in beta rank. Yes. Right around that mid 30s. Like, I thought he did a really good job. I think that's, like, if they're able to sort of stay in that range and the offense, like, improves, like, they were around in that 30s too. If the offense can get up to like a top 25 offense, like, Washington State's going to beat their projection. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. And to his credit, right? Like, Dickert could have very much been, you know what? We're going to build our foundation on defense. We're going to run the football. And then
Marcus Freeman today from Notre Dame. He comes out, he's like, we want to stop the run and establish the run. I was like, Jesus, what is it with defensive head coaches that just like this? Look, college football ain't the NFL. Like, you could score points running the football. You just can't do it with Tommy freaking Reese as your offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I mean, like, Dickert fully could have come out with a run the damn football hat on. And like,
right,
sat
like
down and,
you can't say that if John Donovan is your OC. Like,
but they did, like, they went out, they got Ward. They like,
right. He went the other direction. He's like, we're going to throw the football all around. Let's go air raid. Let's import. He pulled the Western Kentucky. Let's import an offense. Whole hog, right? Let's bring in the OC and the QB.
Love it. Feel bad for the other programs. Doesn't matter. We're moving on. All right, two more games here, and I think these are interesting games, both of them actually. So
these are really fun games.
Yeah, because one of them's going to be fast. 7:30 p.m. on ESPN, Boise State, a 3-point underdog on the road at Reser Stadium, or half of Reser Stadium, which I'm fascinated. Like, I'm really, like, I want to know how the camera angles. Like, are they going to have one on the stadium side where they're just shooting into Corvallis, like the forest? Just for the whole aesthetic of that game, I think is fascinating. Like Boise State, I grabbed them at 3.5. So I got them. I put money on Boise State. I got them a little earlier. I think this team is interesting. It is certainly not the Boise of, like, of years gone by. Yeah, where are the Snowdens of yesteryear up? This is a team that made a bowl. You got Andy Avalos as your coach. you know, they still have Bachmeier.
Yeah. And that, like, here's the fun side of, like, I mean, the Boise State under Avalos had a really good defense last year, 27 for a group of five team, 27 in beta rank. They get an offense last year for Oregon State that was number 16 overall. Now here's where it gets interesting. So Oregon State, they're at 69 on offensive returning production. They've got about 61% coming back. Boise State is at number 10 in returning production on defense. They've got 81% of their defense coming back. They were at 18 in effective rush. Now they struggled to stop the pass, 47 in effective pass. But this is a good matchup. Like, Oregon State is going to have, like, they're not going to be able to come in and push these guys around. Like, they are going to have to show up and play big boy football like they did against Utah and run the football. And they're going to have to hit some passes to open things up a little bit, because if they don't hit anything, and this may just require their pretty good tight end to be pretty good, like, it's going to get really crowded around that line of scrimmage with Boise.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the few games this week where we can go back and forth, right? Like, what's the running offense against the rush defense? So, like, you highlighted how Boise was like number 18, you said, defending the rush.
Yep.
That's a problem, because Oregon State loves to rush that football, so they're running into the strength of this Boise defense. Oregon State released their depth chart a few hours ago, and I was looking at it and I'm just like, gosh, this is worrisome. Like, if you take a look at what they bring back on the wide receiving front, to your point, right? Like, Musgrave was fine. He had like 500 yards, a couple touchdowns, but like, he wasn't like the Georgia tight end, you know, like,
right. He's not Brock Bowers. Like, he's not like a game changer. Right. Like, I think that, like we talked about, like, I think they're fine at running back. Right. And we largely think they're okay at offensive line, but this Boise team might be a bad matchup.
Yeah, because you flip
for them,
right? Like, I mean, Oregon State's defense, I mean, we've been talking about this for 6 months, like, was not good last year, but,
no.
But like, what's Boise good at on the offensive side?
Yeah, so this is where, like, this might be a little bit of a bad matchup for them. So it's, Boise was at 61 on offense last year, so that's not great for Boise standards, you know, that you would think, right? Like, yeah, that's a decent group of five offense. They were 31 in effective pass, 84 in effective rush. Now, they really did struggle with drive efficiency. They didn't put together long drives to put up points. They really tried to be more explosive. And now Oregon State struggled with drive efficiency. They did contain explosives a little better, but man, Oregon State was 101 in effective pass. So here's the thing. Like, now Oregon State brings back a mountain of returning production on defense. Like, they are at number, where we got them at? They're at 23 in returning production on defense, 77% of their production's coming back there. I mean, that's like the real positive, I think, for the Beavers, is like, you can talk yourself into the defense improving a bit. But I think Boise's going to largely be able to put up some points. I think Bachmeier might have himself a good game. I just feel like it really comes down to, like, this game. Like, if Oregon State's able to run the ball, I think they can win it, right? Like, I think they can. But it, like, Beta Rank's got this as a true toss-up, right? Like, it's, like, Oregon State at home versus Boise State, it's, you know, 50% win probability and a zero on the spread.
So, I'm taking Boise State. I would very much like for Oregon State to have a great year. I don't believe it. You just keep hearing it. Like, I listen to a lot of college football podcasts, and almost every show is like, oh, they keep a lookout for Oregon State. And I get it. I love Jonathan Smith, love this program. I really like what he's been able to do. But that defense worries me so very much. And I think this is probably, if it's bad, you're going to know in this game. And I think it's bad. So I'm going to take the three. I got them at 3.5, but like, for the sake of the show, we're going to do three here. It dropped to 2.5 briefly. It's been ping ponging back and forth there. So are you going to lay the points, or are you going to take them?
Oh man. I mean, Oregon State by 3. I mean, God, Vegas has this like right on just about where I've got it. Because I'm going to take Boise. I don't trust the Beavers pass defense. And the fact that like Boise brings back so much and they were mostly good stopping the run last year, I think that's a, I think that is not a good sign.
We'll see. Either or, by the way, in terms of the running backs there and the transfers that they got, Trey Lowe and I think it was Sydney. I almost want to say Sydney Powell. It's very, very much not Sydney Powell, but it is.
Yeah.
I forget the other person that the transferred in. But in any case, either or on that front. And they have a really good freshman that's coming up, too. All right. Last game. And I think this is really interesting. Kent State, 10 soldiers and Nixon coming, 22-point underdog on the road at Seattle. Late game, 7:30 p.m. And I think this is on FS1. Let's go. A little nightcap for all the peoples out there, the degenerates. And I want to take Washington, but like this Kent State offense is super funky. And my worry with Washington was that they have some interesting pieces that return. Like I do think that Washington's going to win this game. But DeBoer brought his people with him from Fresno State, and I don't know about them yet. You got to know your neighbors first before you invite them over to dinner and all that stuff. Like I'm curious what that defensive staff puts together, because Kent State's going to try to go. Is that still the case here, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, so here's my concern with Kent State. So, like, Vaderank has them projected to regress off of last year. The whole MAC was bad, but they were at 106 last season. Their defense was really bad last year, 121 in Vaderank. I mean, that's a really bad team. All of their numbers sort of hover around in that range. I do expect Washington, they were at 93 last year on offense. I expect them to be significantly better. the old bad coaches are mostly gone, you know, like in steps and professionals, and you get Michael Penix, who I think will largely be good. Vaderank actually has this at 24.25 in this game with the home field. And I like Washington considerably in this game. I think Washington's defense, like Kent State, like they're what really hurts them is yes, they were kind of fun offensively last year. They were at 68, which is a pretty good group of five offense, and they were, you know, a pretty run heavy offense, but they lose Dustin Crum, who's their QB, off. You know, he just got cut by the Chiefs. The other guy, Colin Schley, who's their likely starter, did not get a lot of reps last year. And Crum was also a big help in the running game. He put up 703 yards rushing for them. They also, I believe, lose Xavier Williams, their running back, I believe. Anyway, Cooper's back. But I do think that this offense, like Washington, might be able to stack the box against them and sort of dare Kent State to pass. And I think that in that case, like Kent State's going to find themselves in trouble. I like the Huskies here. I think they're going to be able to put up a lot of points in this game.
Okay.
Oh, DeBoer is so much better than Donovan and what they were doing last year. Like that's my main thing is like, I think you have to like, they didn't quite have like the massive influx of talent that USC did, but they had a fairly talented roster to begin with. And you are just sort of like fully washing your mouth out from where they were last year.
Mm. I like what you're talking about personnel. Like, but I'm going to be taken. I normally don't do this, right? Like, I'm pretty down on the Pac-12, and I took five or six teams.
21 points? Like, I think, it's the hook, though, that 21.5. That's like
22. I got it at 22. I
know. You got to hit 22. But that puts you at, I mean, like, it's always useful to think of it as, like, that puts you at four possessions, right? Like, Washington has to win by four possessions.
I don't like that. I'm going to stick with Kent State. One of the things that
you talked me into it. Like I talked myself into it, but I'm like, no, I'm gonna regret it because like the projection model, and it's like it was insanely small sample. So this is like it, but it piled up some wins last week. It went 6-1.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that carries over to this week in a much larger sample. But this one feels like one of those ones where like I'm gonna pick against the model and I'm gonna regret it later.
it's just like I hope I'm not putting money on this game, Again, it's the beginning of the season. I'd like to see, I'd like to see Washington's wide receivers actually show up, because they haven't. And I know that I know, like on paper and in camp, they've been talking about the wide receivers really being there. And they did break through a little bit at the end of the year. I need to see that to continue. I thought it was fascinating that Washington's depth chart, they basically like scrubbed, they like Brutus, you know, in the government, they just scrubbed all of their running backs from the roster basically. And they're starting the UVA guy, and he's fine for like 5 yards carry, but I don't know if he's super explosive. I'm curious to see how they use him. And yeah. I want to see the defense, right? Like the one thing you could do on this Washington team was run on him. Elefantio's out. I know they brought in Cam Bright from Pittsburgh, so that is good. But I just, you know, I think that there could be a world where Kent State's just able just to do enough to stick around.
Our guys have bulked up. Like if you look at like the guys at the ends, they're up to 250-ish now. Like even Savelle Smalls, who's listed defensive end, is like in the 250 plus range.
Yeah.
So that was a good sign, because I was worried I was going to open it up and be like, oh, like that's a light end.
Yeah. but like this could be a game where Washington wins 45-7 or 45-10 or something. So that's certainly on the table. But for the purposes here, I'm going to do that. The other thing too, for transparency's sake, you know, we made a lot of picks. I think I went 58% last year picking all the games. But what I'd like to do this year is just to highlight the games I'm actually, you know, putting money on. So I got Florida. Or I'm sorry. I got USC at -2 against Florida. I got Boise State 3.5 at Oregon State. And I got Oregon at 17.5 at Georgia. And then I'm looking, and I'll make sure to tweet this out. You can follow us at 12 Pack Radio, 12 PAC Radio. I'm looking at the under of Utah, Florida, and I'm looking at the first half USC line and the under of Florida, or of USC and Rice. So just keep a lookout for those. Anything else to plug, Rob? I saw you did the Saturday Six on YouTube. What else you got going on?
Not much. I mean, we'll release our first real our first real model run on Sunday morning with in-season data. It won't count for much in the first run, because you'll have a very few games still. But I'm excited for that. I'm excited to dust it off and run the model again and see where we're at.
Yeah, keep a look at it. So I ran the spread versus beta rank like I always do, and it's just fascinating to see, right? Like, because you can kind of see the model like starting out with its projections and then just chugging along, and all of a sudden it kind of, I got you pretty close. So not quite there yet, but it is really fascinating to look at the numbers, look at the projections, and see the difference between what Vegas thinks these teams are doing and what beta rank does. You can find that at sharpcollegefootball.com. We'll make sure to keep an eye on these. We'll do our review and preview show all in one. This then that will be up next week. Enjoy the games, guys. We'll catch you soon.